Hello and welcome to You Like the Worst Stuff. Off the top, just a regular old AAA podcast here. Go ahead and review it. Tony Sadowski.
I mean, yeah, we do put on a pretty good show. Rating sent.
Joe Foreman.
It'll help more people hear about us to rate and review, I'm told. No reason not to lock that in. The podcast is released and clearly done.
Kat Riley.
Rating in. So many stars. No notes.
And now we add in the microtransactions.
Wait, what?
No!
Too late, fools. I'm Joe Haygood. Pay $5 right now to skip the intro for episode 520.
The stuff you like is bad. The stuff we like is worse. You like the worst stuff. The pop culturally questionable podcast. Worsting it up since 2011. Press start in 3, 2, 1.
All right, this week in questionable pop culture, Crashing Dragon Hidden Microtransaction. Dragon Dogmas 2 post-launch review, microtransaction stuff has really gotten weird.
I was unaware that there was a microtransaction surprise hidden in Dragon Dogmas.
Hilarious, as were many gamers, because even though apparently they had sent an email letting reviewers know that there might be some microtransactions, most of them just ignored that email and played the game and posted their happy little reviews. And then the day one patch hits with all the microtransactions that nobody knew were coming.
Jerk move.
So, yes, apparently Capcom did reference, it was like, they actually referenced a page in the reference in the, like, review guide. And saying, like, on this page, we did tell everybody there were microtransactions.
Yeah, but, like, Capcom's right, done that with all of their big releases lately. So probably people are just expecting, like, a little one here, a little one there, but I guess there's like a dozen or more of them.
Yeah, just to the point that I don't think anybody really mentioned it at all. It just didn't make any of the reviews or coverage. Yeah. And of course, it hits day one and leaves people with a sour taste because these things always do. People kind of hate them.
Well, I think kind of the bigger sour grapes with this one is it's stuff like, want to recustomize your character? Just give us 99 cents.
Yeah, a lot of it is shortcut stuff, which that doesn't bug me. Whatever.
You want a fast travel point? Why don't you give us $2?
Right, like you can get that in the game, but if you want to get there, get that quicker or whatever, you pay for it. Which, like,
right, if you want to have a lot less fun and skip through this game,
there's a lot of Capcom games that do that. You know, you can pay for better whatevers and all the stupid coins in the Resident Evil games, and it just shortcuts you. You don't have to do it, but it is kind of sleazy to drop them after the reviews and everything.
Yeah, a bit of the bait and switch. I don't like that. Plus, the game is apparently kind of borked with performance issues on top of gamers feeling like they kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's what I
the old
heard.
Switcheroo on those day one issues. Patches.
There have been some issues.
I mean, is that abnormal these days?
No, not really.
It just adds to the general distaste for most things in gaming I have right now.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of great talk about this game, but I really had not seen anybody giving a crap about the microtransactions. So there must not be that important.
I think it depends on how deep you get into it. Like, a lot of the stuff they do say, like, oh, yeah, you can get this stuff. It's not overly complicated. It's not, like, time-consuming per se, but it's just one of those things that just it looks a little icky, but it's kind of like you said, Capcom has done this for all the things, and they always look icky in all the games that they have done this for.
Yeah, but like in the end, like that didn't stop anybody from screaming how amazing Resident Evil 4 was, you know? Like, so you can see why Capcom doesn't really care that much, because they've gotten away with it before and they won all the awards. So,
right.
And people have been waiting for this one for a long time. It's kind of a can't-miss deal.
Their big response. They've apologized for any inconvenience and go about your lives. Isn't that cute?
For any inconvenience of
any inconvenience that all the things we did happened.
Right. We're so sorry. You might have to see a screen that asks for $3.
I wonder how invasive it is in the actual game. Like, does it come up anytime you want a fast travel? Oh, you don't have a fast travel point.
I mean,
but
just from playing the other Capcom games, it never comes up ever.
Okay.
It's just go to the store and here's all these stupid little things you could buy, which then would get jammed in your inventory if you buy them. But I don't know. I have not played Dragon Dogmas to find out.
You know, it's funny because I just remember that in like Dragon Age. There was a dude that showed up in your camp and he was a DLC mission quest, and you couldn't make him go away. And if you accidentally talked to him, you know, in the middle of it, it would just stop and go to like a buy this package screen.
We're now launching the PlayStation Store. Thank you.
It was like, boy, you are really, this is really breaking my immersion of the game here.
Just
when the store window pops open.
Not great. Not great.
You played the first one, right, Joe?
I did play a good chunk of the first.
Yeah, I know people that just love it. So cool.
It's definitely it was an interesting take on kind of that RPG, and I liked a lot of the stuff. Like you could grab on and like climb onto the beast and do damage to him while you were like riding on top of him and stuff. And you could see a lot of other games started to incorporate that into their kind of their stuff, but. It was it had its weird quirkiness, as you would expect from a Capcom game, but it was fun and enjoyable. And they did re-release it at some point onto the Xbox One/PS4, like Dragon's Dogma, Better Performance Edition, essentially.
Redogmed.
It's like, hey, we run it more than like 25 frames a second now.
Redog-night.
It's great. it had some clunky controls and things of that nature, but...
Yeah, it's
a good game. I mean, this
Amen,
one fascinated
buddy.
Me. I'm interested in the sequel just because, like I said, I tried that character creator out, and it is insane.
Yeah.
And it definitely got me. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I got a bunch of other stuff I need to, like, finish and play that. And maybe I'll just wait for this to go on sale. Because, hey, if it's anything like Suicide Squad kills the Justice League, maybe it'll be on sale a month or two from now. Yeah,
especially if it's busted right now. They're going to be doing apology sales real soon.
You know, hey, good. Speaking of things you need to finish, you're trying to finish 50 games this year, right?
Yes.
Truth.
And
I have nine.
I initially read this headline as Kotaku editor-in-chief resigns following corporate directive for staff to write 50 game guides per year. And I'm like, oh, that's not too bad. And then I went back and I reread it, and I said, 50 game guides per week.
Your diligence has paid off, Kat. It is per week.
Woo!
And I said, God. Are there 50 guides that are there 50 games that exist every week?
There aren't 50 games worth playing.
Seriously. What is up with this?
We don't care if they're worth playing. Write a guide about it, guys. Write a guide about
it. That's amazing.
If you play Fruit Ninja on your phone, write a guide about it.
Obviously, they are desperate to shut Kotaku down.
All of them are just copy-pasta junk and AI-written scribble and SEO nonsense. They all look and sound the same on across everything on the internet. They're unusable. They're terrible.
Yeah, I know there is a lot of work that goes into writing a decent game guide, but there are few decent sites out there doing it. Most of them are trash.
Yeah.
Yup.
So how is Kotaku going to stand out in that media landscape all of a sudden of just copy-pasting guides?
Well, if they're being forced to write 50 a week, it doesn't sound like quality is a concern.
I can't imagine this edict stands.
Even if they had 50 employees, so each one only had to write one a week, I can't imagine. Especially on the bigger games. It's just, no.
Yeah, writing a technical guide through a game is a very... intense experience to do well, as Foreman kind of said. Yeah. And I can't imagine being able to turn that around, even a simple game, really well in a week. Who's going to proofread this junk? The other people busy writing game guides?
Nobody proofreads this junk. But like, your modern games have so much in them. Like, so
it's
even
impossible.
Just suggesting to finish a guide in a week is absurd.
Take a game like Dragon's Dogma 2. We're talking about it right now. A game like that's 120 hours of gameplay. The first one had like 80 to 90 hours if you were going through. And I mean, you're going to write a game guide about a 90-hour, 100-hour game?
No, maybe like a little 6-hour indie game, but you're supposed to just play those and be done with them.
They would only be able to write guides for like Playdate releases to meet the quota.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even some of the new ones on there are kind of tough.
I'm surprised they didn't just take the Sports Illustrated route and just get some AI, you know, pretend writers and write weird articles. That make no sense.
Just wait for next week's headline.
the jerk balls in charge at GeoMedia are just they don't care. They're really looking for everybody to quit so they can just. Move over to some brainless AI crap, and then eventually this site just won't exist anymore. It'll just disappear from our lives like Toys R Us did.
That is the current media landscape on all fronts. It's awful and run by just evil goons, and we see it constantly just ruining everything. Awful. Awful, awful.
Yeah, like we heard that Coyote versus Acme is actually finally flushed this week. We thought it was going to get saved. Nope, it's not. It's gone.
So the Kotaku editor
private screenings in Zaslav's theater.
The Kotaku editor-in-chief who resigned is named Jen Glennon, and then she wrote a little blog post saying that the media executive at Geo Media, who owns the site, Jim Spanfeller, is an herb.
Oh, no, it's pronounced with a hard H.
Oh, it's an herb.
Herb.
He is a herb.
I did read that somewhere where it's like, they said, and yes, it's with a hard H.
Yeah, they've been calling him that for years now, just because he's a goon and a dope and
it's very confusing, and there's no agreed-upon definition for that, and
he's just a bonehead.
It says if you have to ask, you are one. So
So just a way to make fun of him without using actual, you know, like swear words,
right?
So it caught on because, of course, Spanfeller has annoyed so many people that everybody's dying to find a way to insult him. So this is
the ones that control dead. Do they control Deadspin?
Not anymore, but
Barstool Sports? Okay.
Yeah, that was that part of
that. Because I
remember
that whole thing was one of the ones that got screwed up. Guys, just talk sports, nothing else, please.
It reminds me of Penn and Teller when they had their show Bullcrap, you know, euphemistically.
Mm.
Save it
right.
For the kids, sure. For the kids, you know.
Bullherb.
Yes, Bullherb, sure. It reminds me because, you know, Penn Jillette said, if you go on TV and you call someone a fraud, you can be sued for slander. But if you call them an effing nut job, well, that's an opinion, and that's not slander. So that kind of strikes me as why they're using things like this.
Yeah,
he just called you a oregano, buddy. You can't get mad at us for that.
Spanfeller seems like the kind of litigious jackhole who will go after his former employees like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he sucks.
We know he's not a good herb like cannabis or something. So.
or like the herb that used to be at Burger King. He's not even like that one.
So, yeah, everything's awful and run by horrible ghouls. So what's up with X-Men 97? So I saw some chatter online from people watching it with their kids and stuff and saying, boy, my kids really liked it. It must be really good. And I watched the first one last night, and I honestly didn't know if this was an old show coming back, so well done, I guess. But here's hoping there's a decent story to be told. I very much don't pay attention to the insider news or anything. So you may all well know a lot more about this than I do and had known that it was coming, but I didn't. Mm. Did anybody else watch it?
So I did know it was coming. I have not watched it yet. My plan is after this to sit down and watch the two episodes that are live right now because I loved the original X-Men cartoon from 1992.
I remember I watched it. I was a fan at the time. I definitely did. I haven't gone back since, but I did watch it.
Is this like Windows 95 or something? Windows 98? You know, I don't.
Kind of.
Clippy's a mutant now.
So the X-Men cartoon came out. It was on Fox. It was like a Saturday morning show. It's actually really good cartoon for its time, and it kind of captured most of the story beats from the comics at the time pretty well, but it's always been referred to as X-Men 92.
And before that, it was just called the X-Men cartoon.
Right, it was just X-Men. The first time I remember seeing a year associated with a title was Batman 66.
Right, and that was just different.
And that was like
from
a few years back, like all the nerds Batman, started doing that, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, that caught on in the last 10 years or so where we...
That's newer, I feel.
Right, you get Wonder Woman 77, and you get Batman 89. And
right. The fandoms all have their years. But
yeah.
I had not associated a year with X-Men. It was whatever was on while I was in my teen years watching X-Men cartoons. Like, that was the one I watched, and it was good. I remember it at the time. I liked it. This one is retro-styled to look like one of those, you know, 90s animated shows, but it's apparently new content. So, cool. Great.
It literally takes place after the last episode of that series, is my understanding.
But yeah, I watched through it. It was straight up one of those, like, old school superhero tunes. Yakko Warner voice was one of the little side characters and stuff, so they did the old same voice actors who would have been around at that time to the best of their ability, too. Yeah. It was a thing. I'll probably follow it. I might just kind of wait, because they're doing that whole, like, two episodes a week thing, and they just come in and kind of, you know, tear through it and see what they do. But, yeah, as we get into one last thing, I mean, X-Men is kind of on top of my mind right now, so kind of neat that it popped up again.
Yeah, they definitely tried to go for that style and the animation look of it.
It's all nostalgia goggles. All of it is nostalgia.
So.
And I wonder if it would have any appeal to someone who did not watch and enjoy that show.
I mean, probably. Show it to your kids. Sure.
Yeah.
Why don't we give away a free game?
I love that idea.
I haven't been on the show in a few weeks. And I've missed our fans.
And we are poor for it.
I missed our fans, and I would like to give them a love letter.
Oh, that's good of you.
Yes, a love letter via Steam. So whoever redeems this code on Steam, you get a love letter. So the code is R84NV0ZMIDHDZP3.
And now we've come to one last thing where everybody gets a chance to show some love, throw some shade, or just talk about something they want to talk about. Kat, what do you got?
So I am enjoying the site 4-Minute Books. They do very short book summaries, and I have discovered a lot of books that I think I'm interested in reading via the site.
Excellent.
It's completely free, and you can watch the summaries over on YouTube, or you can just read them on the site. And it's good for deciding if a popular book is something you actually want to invest your time in and read or not. Tony?
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with The Marvels as my one last thing this week. I was bopping around Disney Plus, and in addition to seeing X-Men there, and I was like, huh, they brought that old cartoon back. Neat. I noticed that The Marvels was up, so I hit play on that. And I was like, oh, I'd wanted to see that. We never made it to the theater, so cool. We watched it. My son and I have both been on kind of a meh, okay, Marvel stuff, whatever. We'll kind of pick and choose and see if something catches our eye. And he's been on more of a like, I'm just not feeling it right now. But boy, did we have fun. I thought it was a really fun movie. We liked it a lot. It was, it had a good sense of humor. I was not expecting lots of the stuff that happened in it, but I guess I should have from the kind of playful tone the Ms. Marvel set. It was a blast.
And I really love Iman Vellani. She is so good as Ms. Marvel. She just seems to run.
Oh, she's wonderful.
So much.
She is a highlight. So.
And I'm hoping that we get to see more of Ms. Marvel in future projects.
And of course, at this point, I don't know if it's any kind of spoiler, but the post-credit scene, did an X-Men tease too. So that was pretty fun.
That was funny. I heard about that, and I didn't believe it because I saw no one talking about it.
And my son had said the same thing. Right. He's like, why didn't I hear anyone mention this?
Like, I thought people would have been going ape about that.
And I was like, I don't know, maybe just no one, like literally no one saw it.
Yeah, yeah, that's the answer.
Hey, good. What are you up to?
So we talked about this last week, Tony, and I finally got into my first hour to hour and a half-ish.
Yes.
Of the original Tomb Raider.
Right.
Wow. Because I bought the Tomb Raider 1-3 remastered edition, and as we mentioned, I have never actually ever played the first Tomb
Guys,
Raider
Guys, he's
game.
Going in cold to Tomb Raider 1.
Wow.
Ever.
Has never played the original. This is great. This is the perfect test case.
I didn't have a PlayStation 2, and I did not have a 3D accelerator card at the time that would allow me to run this game with Justice.
Did
on
not have
PC.
A Sega Saturn, as I did.
Oh, I guess. Was it on the Saturn
That's
as well?
That's where I played it first.
Okay. All right. Yeah, did not have a Saturn, did not have a PS2, and didn't have a very powerful PC at the time because I was broke. So I never played it. I never got around to it. And I, even though I've probably bought the Tomb Raider collection many times, probably on good old games and elsewhere, but I finally played it, or played some of it.
Some.
That's a rough game to go back to now from
1990. I just remember a lot of you had to position her exactly right to make the jumps. Like, there's a grid to where she stands.
It was very unforgiving.
It is funny because with the remastered one, they have given you the option to use normal controls instead of tank controls, which I appreciate. But yes, it is still sometimes an exercise in futility trying to jump across a bridge.
You will plunge to your
sometimes
death a
just
whole
trying
lot.
To jump up to a ledge is an exercise in futility.
Yeah.
So it definitely is still, even with the remastered version, it feels like it is probably a product of its time.
Not remastered enough.
Yeah, I think we've shown what a revisited Tomb Raider can be in a recent era.
It is. They do allow you to toggle between the two, so you can definitely see. Like, oh yes, they definitely did some upgrading and lighting things, and Laura's model looks more proportionalized.
Right.
Let's just say,
right, not like a mass of polygons. Yes.
Yes. trying to
very
be
very diplomatic, Tony.
Thank you. Is still sometimes very. I mean, there are times when I'm like, oh, come on, guys. I know I did not mess that jump up. Come on.
No, you messed that jump up. And we all messed that jump up 1,000 times. Yeah, I think it's probably one of those games that if I were to go back and play now, I'd be like, my God, I really enjoyed this because it felt new and fresh at the time. And boy, oh boy, you can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, after the time I had killed probably the 60 to 70th dog or wolf or whatever it is.
Yeah, you do a lot of dog killing in that blob. Early part of the game.
Yeah, there was a point where I was like, all right, maybe we'll get back to this in a few weeks. This is not a game I know if I want to play continuously for the next 3 weeks. So, yeah.
Well, you're not going to forget the complex control scheme. Don't worry.
No, although I could not figure out for the life of me how to get out of water. I was like, I got into the water. How can I get out of the water?
Hmm.
You had to turn the PlayStation on its side.
Oh, right.
I could see where at the time that was probably like, oh, man, this is groundbreaking.
Yeah, we don't really need to go back to PS1 games.
Yeah,
It is a tough. It is a tough swallow at times.
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth available now.
if they remade the first three Tomb Raiders, oh, heck yeah, I would. I am again.
Yeah, if you actually did them, you know,
in modern style.
Right, you did them some service and updated a bit. Sure.
yeah, then I would play it again.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what if we made these old caves not suck and you did just shoot dogs for the first hour? Right. Yeah, that'd be great.
Foreman, what do you got?
I'm doing some mental arithmetic on how much is enough Skull and Bones, because I played the beta, like I mentioned the other week, for like, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours on the beta, because it was a weekend. And then I saw that there is a trial version of Skull and Bones for 8 hours, right? And you just download it and it's counting. It's the whole game. You just get 8 hours. And it turns out the progress from the beta carried over.
What?
So now I've got 5 or 6 hours in the beta and I could do 8 hours in the trial. And
that's a good amount of game, pal.
Maybe that's enough.
Without ever buying the game.
that might be enough. If I still want more after that, the game's probably going to cost like $15 by that point.
True.
At the rate it is dropping on the store, you are not wrong.
This is going to be like, also, what was that extreme sports game that Ubisoft did?
Oh, Riders Republic.
That's it,
Riders Republic. Which is now on sale for $9.
Right. I mean, that was a couple years ago, but Riders that was supposed Republic. To be like a whole big online community. Everybody's racing down the hill kind of thing. And then, like, I never heard anybody talk about it ever.
I also want to say, since you're talking about Skull and Bones, I don't know if you paid attention to the opening credits as you're sailing through like all that stuff and you sail out to the sea. There are no less than, I think, 17 or 19 Ubisoft development studios that worked on
this.
Yes,
it just keeps flying it's like through them.
It's like it starts off with the
Ubisoft Toronto, Ubisoft Belgium, Ubisoft,
and then it's like it starts Altoona. It starts getting to like Ubisoft Kiev. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Ubisoft Mumbai. Yeah. I was like, okay, nah, that's not real, is it?
Yeah, no, man. There's Ubisoft enclaves all over the globe, and they all had to pitch in on this.
Like, where did these studios come from?
Teamwork makes a dream work. Way to go, guys.
Yeah, yeah. But knowing that my progress from the beta carried over, I'm like, huh, that's exceptionally generous, because I could...
Yeah.
I could just do another 8 hours and probably be fine.
Yeah, it's a good chunk of game. I feel like you might be nearing done.
I am glad you were enjoying. I played 2 hours of it. I couldn't. When I found out, like, no, you never get off the boat except for, like, for a specific mission, you'll get off
the boat. I saw somebody dinging it saying that who wanted an open world game where you're a boat? Because you are.
I was like, when I was like, I told that story where it's like, oh, I have to get wood, and I'm like trying to figure out how do I dock to get off to get the wood.
No, it's some dumb mini game. You just have to sail close to it, and then like hit L2 3 times.
When I figured that out,
dumb.
When that happened, I was like, that's it. I'm out.
It's
this
dumb.
Is stupid. This is stupid. I'm out.
Like,
I'm done.
I can waste some more time in that nonsense, especially since my beta stuff carried over.
Yeah, what do you got to lose? Go for it.
Yeah, my character progression, the missions I did, the cosmetics that I, you know, unlocked or whatever, all there. I couldn't believe it. Was not expecting that at all.
Very generous.
Well, enjoy your trip on the seven seas.
Yo-ho.
But I think that's going to do it for episode 520. So until next time, we're out of here.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Say hi on Threads and Instagram at You Like the Worst Stuff, and on Blue Sky at The Worst Podcast. We have a tip jar at patreon.com/worststuff. And thank you if you throw a buck our way. Music provided by Eric Madias of soundimage.org. Until next time, this has been Robot Lady. Game over.
Joe Haygood has wholeheartedly accepted and embraced his herbaceousness. You like the worst stuff.